Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Bob McLean. Hello, howdy, greetings, welcome, salutations, and Tuesday afternoon alohas to you. Your timing is exquisite. You have arrived at the beginning of the 5 o'clock follies, the most heavily commuted hour of the show. Not to mention the most heavily congested as well. And as always, your input is invited, encouraged, and welcomed. Here is how you join me and be a part of the conversation. Just grab your phone and use the Ingalls Advantage talk line, 800-347-1063. Common Sense Retirement Planning text line number 71307, and my email address, bob@1063word.com. The comments last week by the new Attorney General, Bill Barr, saying, I think there was spying on the Trump campaign, set off a round of pearl clutching from Democrats in Washington, as you might expect. We all know, those of us that have followed the revelations that have come out about how this investigation started, the lies and the obscuring of facts that was exhibited by the head of the FBI and others in the DOJ in order to get those FISA warrants is information we all have had for some time. And I have speculated, as have others, that even if you're the director of the FBI, even if you are a high-ranking executive in the DOJ, that you would not embark on this kind of campaign unless you were sure of a couple of things happening. Number one, that your rear end was covered by the White House. That if things go south, you're not going to be the one who is hauled before the Senate Intelligence Committee to explain your actions. And the other is that you are assuming that the candidate on whose behalf of their campaign you are doing this investigation is probably going to win. Now, remember, that was common knowledge right up until election night. Oh, Hillary has got this in the bag. She's going to win going away. Trump is going to get stomped. He doesn't have a chance. He's not a politician. He's some reality TV show host. He can't win. Gulp. Wait a minute. He won? Well, what do we do now? Well, now we got to go back and cover our tracks, is what we have to do. Andy McCarthy, writing today about this. In Senate testimony last week, Attorney General William Barr used the word spying to refer to the Trump administration spying on the Trump campaign. Of course, fainting spells ensued with a media Democrat complex in meltdown. Former FBI Director Jim Comey tut-tutted. He was confused by Barr's comments since the FBI's surveillance, as he called it, had been authorized by a court. Needless to say, the former director neglected to mention that the FISA court was not informed that the Bureau's evidence for the warrants was unverified hearsay that had been paid for by the Clinton campaign. This was all predictable. Less than a year ago, we learned the Obama administration had used a confidential informant, as they like to call him. That's a nice way of describing a spy, to approach at least three Trump campaign officials in the months leading up to the 2016 election, straining to find proof that the campaign was complicit in the Kremlin's hacking of Democrat emails. As night follows day, we were treated to the same beltway hysteria we got this week. silly semantic carping over the word spying, which, regardless of whether a judge authorizes it, is merely the covert gathering of intelligence about a suspected wrongdoer, organization, or foreign power. There is no doubt that the Obama administration spied on the Trump campaign. As Barr made clear, the real question is, what predicated the spying? In other words, was there a valid reason for it, strong enough to overcome our norm against political spying? Or was it done rashly? Was a politically motivated decision made to use highly intrusive investigative tactics when a more measured response would have sufficed? Such as a defensive briefing that would have warned the Trump campaign of possible Russian infiltration? Last year, when the spy games got underway, James Clapper, Obama's director of national intelligence, conceded that, yes, the FBI did run an informant. Spy, after all, is such an icky word, at Trump campaign officials. But we were told, this was merely to investigate Russia. Cross Clapper's heart, it had nothing to do with the Trump campaign. No. Indeed, the Obama administration only used an informant because, and I bet you didn't know this, doing so is the most benign, least intrusive method of conducting investigation. In other words, Gambino, I assure you this was just for your own good. Right. The spying question came up last spring when we learned that Stephen Halper, a longtime source for CIA and British intelligence, had been tasked during the FBI's Russia investigation to chat up three Trump campaign advisors, Carter Page, George Papadopoulos, and Sam Clovis. This in addition to earlier revelations that the Obama Justice Department and FBI had obtained warrants to eavesdrop on Page's communications beginning about 3 weeks before the 2016 elections. The fact that spying had occurred was too clear for credible denial. The retort then was misdirection. Now, there was no spying on Donald Trump or his campaign, just on a few potential bad actors in the orbit of the campaign. That was nonsense then, and it's nonsense now. The politicians making these claims about what the FBI was doing might have been well served by listening to what the FBI said it was doing. Example, then-Director Comey's breathtaking public testimony before the House Intelligence Committee in March of 2017. Comey did not just confirm the existence of a counterintelligence probe of Russian espionage to influence the election, notwithstanding that the government customarily refuses to confirm the existence of any investigation, let alone a classified counterintelligence investigation. The director further identified the Trump campaign as a subject of the probe, even though, to avoid smearing people, the DOJ never identifies uncharged persons or organizations that are under investigation. The FBI was spying, and it was doing so in an investigation of the Trump campaign. That's why for over 2 years, Washington has been enhanced by the specter of Trump collusion with Russia, not Page or Papadopoulos collusion with Russia. Comey went to extraordinary lengths to tell the world the FBI was not merely zeroing in on individuals of varying ranks in the campaign. The main question was whether the Trump campaign itself, the entity, had coordinated in Russia's espionage operations. In the months prior to the election, as its Trump-Russia investigation ensued, some of the overtly political, rabidly anti-Trump FBI agents running the probe discussed among themselves the prospect of stopping Trump or of using the investigation as an insurance policy in the highly unlikely event that he won the election. After Trump's stunning victory, the Obama administration had a dilemma. How could the investigation be maintained if Trump were told about it? After all, a president would have the power to shut it down. Well, January 6, 2017, Comey, Clapper, CIA Director John Brennan, National Security Agency Chief Michael Rogers visited President-elect Trump in New York to brief him on the Russia investigation. Did they tell him that they were spying on him? No. No. This is a really good piece, and it goes on, and I don't want to because of the constraints of time, I can't share with you the whole thing, but I'll be giving it to Moneypenny. It's at Breitbart today, a number of places on the web. There you go, Moneypenny. She will put it up on our Facebook page, and you can share it for yourself. And essentially, what it is doing is confirming what we already knew. So the question now is not what did Trump know and when did he know it? The question is what did Obama know and when did he know it? Because anybody who thinks these people went off half-cocked on their own, Comey, Brennan, Clapper, all the rest of them, without having cover from the White House, is kidding themselves. 517, 17 after 5 here on the Bobby Mac Show. Be right back.
What?
Welcome back. 523 here on the Bobby Mac Show this Tuesday afternoon. Update for you from the canine file today. Those of you with me yesterday may remember I told you the story about the dog found swimming 135 miles from shore in the Gulf of Thailand. And some workers on an oil rig saw the doggy trying to stay afloat above the waves and called to it, and it swam over to them. We have an update now, and the doggy is safely back on dry land. Paws dry, we would call that. A worker on the rig belonging to Chevron Thailand Exploration and Production, Vitisak Payala, said on his Facebook page they saw the dog swimming toward the platform last Friday, said they were lucky to spot it because if there had been big waves, it probably would not have been visible. The dog made it to the platform, clinging to the support structure below deck without barking or whimpering. The crew managed to lower a rope and secure it around the dog and haul it up. Vitisak said they speculated the dog might have fallen off a fishing trawler, so they dubbed it Boon Rod. Boon Rod. That is Thai for survivor. The dog was delivered by boat to the southern port of Songkhla on Monday and was declared in good shape after being taken to the animal protection group Watchdog Thailand. Mr. Vitisak said if the dog is unclaimed, he would take it home to his home in northeast Thailand. Good for you. To the phones we go. Charlie is next up. He is in my stomping grounds of Taylor's. Hi, Charlie, and welcome to the program.
How you doing, Bobby Mack?
So far, so good.
Yeah, I was wondering why no one ever investigated the Clintons' affiliates with the drug cartels there, known as the FDA and the Big Pharma.
Not to mention Uranium One.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, they had a lot of money invested in her when she lost to Obama, and then the second time they had a heap of money lost to her.
Yep.
On her, actually. But I understood that she sat on the board of major pharmaceuticals, and well, Obama got the drug, well, what's known as Obamacare passed, so that
right.
helped them out quite a bit. But I think this picture with, you know, the Clintons and this Russian investigation and everything sits in a higher court because the FDA and the pharmaceutical companies are in on trying to get her in there.
Well, there were many major corporations that would have, you know, they played along with the Clinton Foundation. They were heavily invested in the Clinton Foundation. And when she lost, of course, her influence went with it. And the corporation's interest in her as a candidate disappeared overnight.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're still trying to get a hold of the, you know, they want them in there so that they can keep pumping everybody full of poison.
Well, let's face it, her political career is pretty much over. The question she has to answer now is everything that went on during that campaign. Because we know It was Hillary's campaign and the DNC that paid this supposed op-ed research firm, opposition research firm, Fusion GPS. They're the ones that went out and hired this Steele character to phony up the dossier, which the FBI conveniently forgot to tell the FISA court about when they sought the warrants to spy on the Trump campaign. Richie is next. He is in Spartanburg. Hi, Richie, and welcome to the Bobby Mack Show.
Hey, Bob. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
I was listening to Rush Limbaugh today, and he was saying that it took the Parisian firefighters about 2 hours to get to the fire at Notre Dame. Well, I'm just wondering, is that the same way they fought the Nazis? They showed up 2 hours late?
Well, remember the Maginot Line, the defensive line that the French built that was going to protect them from invasion from the dreaded Huns to the east?
Well, maybe we can call it the imaginary line.
Yeah, that's more like it, Richie. Thanks. I appreciate it. Yeah, Maginot Line. And so Hitler just sent the Blitzkrieg panzer tanks right around it. See ya. Goodbye. In on the text line 71307, Bobby, Google Images, Evelyn de Rothschild. Take a look at the image. Evelyn de Rothschild, then look at images of Bernie Sanders. What's your opinion? I mean, Bernie and Evelyn de Rothschild are twins, in my opinion, and they have the same accent. Strange. Thanks, Bob. By the way, their wives also look like twins as well. I think we have another moment with Bernie, don't we, today? We like to share these moments as Bernie, since he is now a legitimate capitalist millionaire from his book sales, you know. He's out there experimenting around in the real world, figuring out how to do things. So we share another moment with Bernie.
Bernie Sanders makes a hotel reservation.
I would like to make a reservation for a room with one queen bed. I do not need two queen beds because I am one person. And why would you want to waste a perfectly good bed? Additionally, I would like the free Wi-Fi. In fact, all Americans should have the free Wi-Fi.
Absolutely.
Whatever that is, 10 million Americans do not have access to the Wi-Fi for free.
This has been Bernie Sanders making a hotel reservation.
Yeah, and he's getting the presidential suite these days. He can afford it. What are you showing me, Bunny? Oh, picture, money, penny. Wow. Yeah. Evelyn de Rothschild does bear a striking resemblance to Bernie Sanders. Poor baby. The Rothschilds mixed up with a Marxist like Bernie? Perish the thought. 5:30. Patrick's ready in the news center. Right back on the other side here on Tuesday.
Wow, this is awesome.
Well, it's not too shabby. 5:38, 22 before 6 here in the Bobby Mack Show. So all of the Democrat candidates, all, how many of them are there now? I think it's 183, I believe, is the latest number of those vying for the Democrat presidential nomination to be the designated victim of Donald Trump in November of 2016. They're all releasing their money. How much dough they have accumulated in the first quarter of this year. Meantime, the bright, shiny object that is out there right now for the Democrats is South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Beetlejuice. He has now officially kicked off his campaign, and wow. South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg announced his run for president on Sunday, as his supporters cheered the moment he kissed his husband on stage. The two men embraced after Buttigieg finished his opening campaign speech in South Bend, Indiana. The moment brought immediate praise from his supporters. Mayor Pete kissed his husband after he announced his campaign, and it brought LGBTQ people to tears. Read a headline on an LGBTQ nation story calling it an act of defiance. Buttigieg referred to his husband throughout the speech, thanking him for his support. Thanks, Chasen, my love. I'm pretty fond of him, too, for giving me the strength to do this and the grounding to be myself as we go. And went on to discuss his life as a gay American in detail. Did he attack Pence again? You know, that's really low. Mike Pence is a very nice guy, and Mike Pence, to the best of my knowledge, has never said anything at all critical about this guy. But he being Mayor Pete, Mayor Beetlejuice, has been teeing up Vice President Pence as a target for his criticism, trying to make it appear that Pence has been some kind of homophobe or something, which he is not. So, you know, there's this. I know he's well-spoken, he's well-educated, went to Harvard, did 6 or 7 months in Afghanistan as a naval reservist, and all the rest. But he's a garden variety progressive liberal. His father is a Marxist, a professor at Notre Dame, the university, not the church. And he's cut from the same cloth as AOC and Pelosi and Schumer and the rest of them. And he talks a good talk. But, when you boil it right down, he's endorsed the Green New Deal, health care for all, Medicaid for all, as I like to call it, because that's what it would turn out to be. Just destroy the healthcare system in this country. Turn it all over to the government. You remember how much fun going to the DMV used to be before they at least computerized? Imagine going to the doctor being the same as going to the DMV. Now, Pelosi is still having a difficult time herding all of the progressive cats through the halls of Congress. She did an interview with the Disassociated Press in her office at the Capitol last Wednesday, and then on yesterday made it a point to heap more praise on Democrats who flipped Republican seats in the 2018 midterms. Yeah, watch them flip back, the ones that voted for Trump in 2020. And downplayed representatives like AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Pelosi saying candidates like AOC who carry districts where a glass of water, if you had a D next to your name, could win. Ouch. When we won this election, said Speaker Botox, it wasn't in districts like mine or Alexandria's. She's a wonderful member of Congress, as I think all of our colleagues will attest. Yeah. But those are districts that are solidly Democratic. To drive the point home, she picked up a piece of water glass next to her on the podium and said, "This glass of water would win with a D next to its name in those districts." Pelosi, who was traveling in Europe with a congressional delegation this week, how nice for her, made the comments during an appearance before the London School of Economics and Political Science. Pelosi's comment appeared to be her latest attempt to downplay the influence of the Democrats' progressive wing. Progressive wing? Do they have a moderate wing? Do they have a conservative Democrat wing? No, they got one wing. That's more progressive and slightly less progressive. That's it. During a Sunday interview with CBS News' Leslie Stahl on 60 Minutes, which was a love fest, as you might imagine, Pelosi said that faction, that is the progressives, was, quote, like five people. She didn't go on then to explain, by the way, how if it's only like five people that are in this progressive wing of the Democrat Party, how come virtually all of the Democrats have signed on to the lunacy of the Green New Deal, where we'll get rid of airplanes and cow flatulence, and we'll tear down every house in America and rebuild it to government eco-friendly standards. Something like two-thirds of all the Democrats in Congress have signed on to this junk. But Nancy obviously understands the threat that the AOCs, the Ilhan Omars of the world, pose to the Democrats' agenda. Whoever the candidate is, even if it's crazy Bernie, you know, these people are going to act as a sea anchor on the Democrat ticket. People look at this socialist agenda and say, no thanks. Believe I'd rather have freedom. 6:15 here on the Bobby Mac Show. Be right back here on Tuesday. Welcome back. 5:51. It's 6:09 here on the Bobby Mac Show. Bobby, hopefully patriotism is never off topic. I just realized I'm the only one on my cul-de-sac displaying the American flag. Really? I live in a cul-de-sac too. And both houses, left and right, not politically, geographically, the one to the left and one to the right, have American flags up as well, which is certainly good news. Bobby, look how successful the government-run business post office is. The government cannot run a business, but they're very successful at wasting and spending our money. Well, they can run a business. They just don't care what it costs to run it, you know, because there's always more money coming in. Bobby, how many groups will the Republican Party continue to sacrifice over to the Democrats? For example, the LGBT intolerance will only lead to yet another community voting for the Democrats. They already are voting for the Democrats. Bobby, Mayor Pete may be well-educated, but apparently has not learned anything about biology. Bobby, what's with all these American hyphenated adjectives? I guess I'm an upstate Appalachia American, from Alex in TR. Bob, I can hear the bias in your voice as you speak about Mayor Pete. What's so wrong about him kissing his husband? I imagine you'll ignore this, but I would appreciate an answer. Well, here it is. I don't care what Pete or anybody else does on their own time in the privacy of their own home. But when they try and force it down my throat, I object. Is that straightforward enough for you? Meantime, odds and ends. I was talking about Beetlejuice going after Mike Pence. The VP is getting pushback from Taylor University students and alumni after the small evangelical Christian school tapped the former Indiana governor to be this year's commencement speaker. Over 3,300 people have signed a change.org petition to have Pence's invitation to the mid-May commencement ceremony rescinded, claiming the Trump-Pence administration's policies are not consistent with the Christian ethic of love we hold dear. Upset alumni and students voicing their anger as South Bend Mayor Pete Beetlejuice, a Democrat presidential hopeful, criticized Pence. I think he was wrong to do so, by the way. I don't think Pence has ever said anything bad about Beetlejuice, who was openly gay, discussed his sexual orientation during an event hosted by the LGBTQ Victory Fund, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, now they're marching and trying to get the invitation to Pence withdrawn. Everything is politicized. Few odds and ends for you this afternoon. This from the Golden State of California. A naked 29-year-old man brandishing a knife shot and killed by a security guard after a bizarre series of events Sunday afternoon in which he reportedly plowed his car into a Palmdale McDonald's and then stabbed an elderly man at an adjoining eatery. 4:30 in the afternoon, Sunday. The suspect, described initially as a shirtless Latino man, oh, it wasn't Mickey D's he hit. He crashed his car into the wall of a Carl's Jr., then got out and ran across the street, to the nearby McDonald's, during which time he undressed completely. Deputies say the man, now naked, entered the McDonald's and stabbed an 88-year-old man who was eating with his grandson. As a suspect was coming out of the McDonald's, he was confronted by an armed security guard. When he tried to assault the guard shot him. Now, the story ends, by the way, get this. A knife was recovered at the scene. Where's this story from? CBS TV station in L.A., Channel 2. A knife was recovered at the scene. The suspect's name was not immediately released. Deputies investigating the cause of the accident and are searching for a motive. Accident? What accident? There's no accident. The guy drove his car into the restaurant. That's not an accident. That's an intentional act. And the other aspect of this that is also fascinating to me, Palmdale, California used to be out in the boonies. And now, Palmdale, California needs an armed security guard at McDonald's. Yeah. 21st century America. Hour number three is zipped on past. 5 o'clock Follies is in the rearview mirror. However, the bonus hour is dead ahead.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.